All right, we're going to start the bottom of Vav Amud Bet. We are discussing a case here. It's the second to last line on Vav Amud Bet, which is Hanu Beit Rei, Dehavadairi Chad, Havadairi, Chad Havadair Ailai, Bechad Havadair Tatai. It's two individuals that live together. One of them lived upstairs, and one of them lived downstairs. Now, itvar tatai, or the other lashon here is itvas tatai, which is a similar lashon we saw before, whether we had this in the Gemara in Boba Metzia, which is itvar versus itvas, which would be to collapse downward versus to topple over. But either way, it became uninhabitable for the lower individual who lives in the lower half of the house. So the downstairs individual says to the upstairs neighbor, let's go rebuild the house. You know, it's a little more difficult for me to live downstairs now that the house, again, it makes more sense to say that it has collapsed, straight, or shrunk, or sunk into the ground, and therefore, right, let's go rebuild the house, says Amalei. The upstairs neighbor says, I'm a shopper card there. He says, I don't have any problems. I'm living just comfortably. It's even better than it was before. I don't have to climb so many stairs to get up to my my place. Samalei istare ano va'avne. He says, listen, it'll be on my back. I'll take it down. I don't know the girsa here, whether you need the word istare, but I don't know if it's necessary. But basically, he says, I'll rebuild the house. He says, I don't have anywhere to go. The person in the aliyah upstairs says, I don't have anywhere to go. So if you rebuild the house, that's fine, but I have to live somewhere in the interim. Samalei ano ugerlecha duchta. I'll rent you a place. Fine, you don't have a place to go to. I'll rent you a place so that you can go somewhere in the interim while I renovate the house. Amalei lo tarachno. Says, I'm not really, he says, I don't want to be bothered. I mean, that means I have to move all my stuff out of the house. I have to get a moving company. I got to switch, move. It's a tircha that I'm really not, I don't really want to undertake at this point in time. So the upstairs, the downstairs neighbor says to him, Amalei, it's probably the girsa here, switch back, loka metaderli. So he says, listen, I can't live here. I mean, it's impossible for me to live downstairs, and you're refusing to do this, so now I'm stuck. I'm really in a bad place. So he says back to him, Amalei, shofa kresech v'o, shofa kresech uvok. So the way Rashi interprets it is he basically says, you know, bend over. You know, be a hunchback. You bend over, go in, bend over and go out. The way I would have read it, that this is the way the read reads it, is a shovel kisech is, you know, wiggle in on your belly and wiggle out on your belly. Basically, you can, the place is still livable, even though it's low down, but you just, you know, wiggle yourself in, wiggle yourself out, and you have to live with it. That's what you're, I don't have to move in. I have no responsibility to you. So I'm Rav Chama. So now Rav Chama is going to become a central figure in this whole Amud here, because he's going to pass on Halacha with all these cases. And this is the first of his Piskei Halacha here, which is Bedina Kama Akev, that the upstairs neighbor has a right to refuse to leave over here. That he doesn't, the downstairs neighbor cannot compel the upstairs individual to move over here. Vahane Mile, now we're going to qualify this Pesach Halacha, is the Lomata Kshure Lomata Miasara. That as long as the floorboards, right, which otherwise would be the ceiling, don't come within the 10 tefachim of the downstairs. Because then, once the floorboards have now come below 10 tefachim, the lower neighbor can say, you're impinging on my living space. So once we come, right, sukkah, right, all these areas where Asarat Tefachim is the basic framework of what's classified as a house or makom dira. It says a 10 tefachim high. If you come below the 10 tefachim, then you've eliminated a makom dira for the individual. So until 10 tefachim, you can say to them, live with the discomfort, because you still have what's classified as a living space. But once you come within 10 tefachim, then he's already impinging on the lower person's living space, then you would have to, at that point, right, he could force him and compel him to rebuild the place. That's my personal space. And that's not meshubad to you. I mean, true, the walls of the downstairs and the lower house are meshubad to the upper house to hold it up. That's as long as it doesn't, again, infringe upon the rights of, living rights of the downstairs neighbor. Again, that's also, again, if there was no explicit tnai between them, which the tnai would dictate that if there was a problem or the living conditions of the downstairs neighbor are changed from what it is now, then our tnai is that then I can rebuild it. I can bump you out and I can rebuild it. So if they do have such a tnai, then he can compel him to take it down and rebuild it.
What think that when two people are in that situation, that the lower person owns the airspace up to his 10-foot-tall ceiling.
Right, but that's not, that's only, again, here, the way Rabbi Chama learns, and we're going to see why Rabbi Chama has this position throughout the Talmud here, is that he doesn't, here the Shibud, right, is simply because we'll see how they split up, or the division between them, that they don't have, he only has rights to a living space. And as long as it's classified as a living space, then he has no other rights. So until 10 tefachim, it's classified as a living space. So he has no rights. Again, unless, this is what Rabbi Chama is qualifying, that unless they have an explicit tenai between them, that it's meshubah, like you're saying, up to my 10-foot ceilings, if anything changes with my living conditions, then
the
I can...
Is same with floor space? Like, if he has been knocked down, he's still...
I think there's a difference between living space, where we say, for instance, where the ceiling is lower, there, the entire living space, which he's entitled to, he's able to use, because it's still classified as a living space, even when the ceiling is low. As opposed to what you're suggesting, when it's Da'ar Alma, Da'ar Amot, even though halachically that's classified as a living space, but you now have diminished the utility or the usable space that he has. So when he loses, for instance, the upper floor had lost usage of except for Da'ar Amot, even though it's still classified as a living space, that's not the full utilization of all the living space that he's entitled to. Whereas on the bottom level, when the ceiling has come down, he's still able to utilize the entire living space, and it still qualifies as a living space because it is above 10 tefachim. So now the Gemara wants to know, b'chiyat nu b'hadea dodi ad kama. Okay, so now when they have this explicit condition between them, how much has to come down? I mean, okay, now we've agreed that if the ceiling comes down, I have the right to rebuild the building so that my ceiling can be appropriate. But then how much is considered or classified as having come down or diminished the ceiling height in order for me to have the right to compel you to leave and have me rebuild the building? So I'm Rabbanan Kameid the Rav, and the Rabbanan said before, Rav Mishmeid the Mar Zutra, Breid the Rav Nachman, Dar Mishmeid the Mar Rav Nachman. Go to Shishanino. That's the what we know, the normal way, which is Rumo Kechatzi or Ko Chatzi Rachbo. So what they're referring to here is the building of the Heichal. The Heichal, as Rashi points out, was Orko, right? The length was 40 Amot. Rachbo, its width was 20 Amot. Gvigavho, and its height was 30 Amot. So if you take the length plus the width and divide it in half, that will give you the relationship between length and width and height. So, for instance, in the case of the Heichal, where it's 40 long and 20 wide, that's 60, divided in half is 30, so the height is 30. So that ratio relationship stands over here, too. So if the roof has now come down, the ceiling has come down to the point where if you measure the length and the width of the room and divide it in half, it becomes below that level, that would be disqualified as a living space based on this tenai, and therefore we'd have the right to compel the other person to move out and have and renovate in order to raise the ceiling again to get to the level that he so desires. So Amar Lahu, Rava probably should be the proper girsa over here. Lava mina luchu lo titlu be buke sirike b'Rav Nachman. Haven't I told you before that don't assign, and as Hilso says, these buke sirikis and ashim rekim, these empty words or these meaningless statements to Rav Nachman. Hachalama Rav Nachman. This is the proper statement of Rav Nachman or qualification for what is classified as appropriate living space when they have such a tenai. And that is a kididai reinshake, the way that normal people live. Meaning that if the tenai is that I may maintain my ceilings, then you have to look at what the customary way to live is and how much of a diminishment in the ceiling is classified as no longer being the original ceiling height. So you have to look at that vakama, and what is that amount? Excuse me, that it's the amount. If you go in mechuza, if you take a bundle of straw, which seems to be a very tall bundle of straw, and you carry it into the house, that if you have the ability of clearance to turn around with this bundle of straw, then the ceiling is of an appropriate height where you can't compel the upstairs person to move out and renovate in order to raise the ceiling height anymore. So if you have this tie between you, the minimum height or the minimum qualification of height is that you should be able to walk in with the straw, be Mr. Vave, turn around, and not and have clearance and not bump into the ceiling. So now the Gemara talks about, this is the first case of a number of cases that we discussed before in which Rav Chama gives a psak halacha. So the first one is Bedina Kema'akev, in our case over here, that he's allowed to, the upstairs neighbor is allowed to stop the downstairs neighbor. He can say, listen, I don't have to move out in order for you to rectify the ceilings as long as they are above 10 tefachim, or if there's a tenai that they're above this
amount where he can carry in this straw, this tall straw, and be mistovev and turn around, not hit the ceiling. So now this is the second case in which Rav Chama gives his comments. How gavra tava banei ashita achrei kavei dechavrei. A person was building a wall, and a wall was opposite or adjacent to the windows of his friend. Vamalei kama falte lai. You are darkening my light. I mean that I have an easement to allow light into my house through these windows. Now when you, by erecting this wall here, are darkening my house or preventing the light from entering in my windows. So Vamalei says, okay, I have an offer for you. Sachar melecha. I will brick up these windows that you have currently, and then I will open you new windows above the level of my wall. So if you want light, you'll get plenty of light, and I will, on my expense, I will take care of this. I will brick up the current windows and put them above my wall, so you won't have any such problem. You're going to, and by doing this, you're going to compromise the integrity of the wall. Because here you're going to brick up, and then you're going to smash holes up in the upper levels to put in the windows. So by doing that, you're going to compromise the integrity of the wall, and I don't want to weaken the wall on which these windows sit. So it says, what I will do is then, instead of banging holes into the wall, which will weaken the foundation or compromise the integrity of the wall, I will take down the entire wall until the point of the windows, and then I will rebuild the wall above my wall, I mean rebuild your wall above my wall, and place the windows in here. So I'm not going to bang out or have to cut a hole for the windows, but rather I will rebuild the wall that frame out the windows, so that won't cause, right, the damage that you're worried about to the foundations or to the wall. He says, now I have a wall that has an older a foundation and an old level, the lower level of the wall is older, and now you're putting on a newer set of stones or bricks on the upper part. That's not going to stay. The integrity of the wall will be compromised by the fact that there are actually two different walls, meaning one older and one newer, that are joined in the middle. So he says, Amalei, I have an offer for you then. Satana la ad aro. I will take down the entire wall down to its foundations. Ubanila, and I will rebuild the wall entirely, and then I'll put these new windows in it above the level of my wall. So I'm like, Chado, Ashita, Chayata, Bekule, Beta, Atika, Lo Kaima. So he says, listen, when you have one wall, one new wall in an entire house where the other three walls are older walls, again, that will not be a good house, meaning that the strength of the house and the integrity of the house will be compromised because you've now changed one wall and not left the other three that are of a different era or a different type. So Malay says, okay, fine, I'll take care of that. So Tanala the Kulibeta, I will take down the entire house, Ubani Lakhakavinana, and I'll put new windows in. I'll rebuild your entire house and put in windows at the higher level above my wall. Amalai lately duchto the Medarba. He says, that's fine, but if you're gonna renovate my whole house, I have nowhere to live in the interim. Meaning that now you're gonna have to bump me out of my house or kick me out of my house, so where am I gonna live in the interim? Says Amalei Argirna Lachaduchta, I will rent you a location in which you can live. So while I'm renovating your house, I'm taking down the entire house, rebuilding it so that it will be strong and the foundations will be good and the integrity of the walls will be good. I'll raise the windows above my wall so we won't have a light problem anymore. And in the interim, when you have to leave the house during renovations, I will rent you the location so that you don't have to worry about it. So Amalei Lo Tarachno says, listen, I don't want to be bothered. I mean, now, if you're going to rent for me, I'm going to have to move all my possessions out of the house. I'm going to move them to a new house. Then I have to live there and all the difficulties. And then I have to move back again. That's a tircha that I don't really want to be bothered with. So I'm Rav Chama. So here again, we have a psak from Rav Chama, but din kama akev, that this individual can say no. He has such a right to say no over here. The other individual built the wall is in the wrong, and he can't compel his neighbor, even if it's just an issue of tarachna, even if it's just an issue of tircha, that you're going to cause him duress, which he doesn't want to undergo. He can refuse because of that duress, since he has the rights to have his window here, and you're the one who is infringing on his rights, and it's your issue, I mean, it's your problem, and he doesn't have to move, and bedina kamakev, and therefore he can withhold acquiescing, even though you're offering him such a good deal, he still can not acquiesce to this offer and say, I prefer to stay in my house and not move from where I am. Please take down your wall so I have light in my windows.
All right, so he said to him, but said the Gemara asks now, this second case of Rav Chama is identical to the previous case, because now Rav Chama is passing in both cases that the individual who is right now wants to compel the second party to take on a tzircha in order to rectify his situation or to make his situation better, and we say you can't compel him, that you don't have such a right. So now Rav Chama is passing the same thing. So then why do I need this second case? So when it says Hakamashmalan, that even though the individual is not using it as a living space, but rather simply as a storage space, that he can still be ma'akev, he can still withhold the rights. So even though the light that's coming in here is not light because he lives in this space and uses it all the time, but rather it's a storage space, but he can say to him, listen, I want the windows here, I want the structure to remain, right, a proper structure with integrity, and therefore I'm going to refuse to allow you to change the structure or to put up the wall to block the light coming in here. So that's, this additional psak of Rav Chama extends it beyond just simple living space, but even to, you can say lo terachna, even when it comes to storage space. Alright, so now the new case. Hanu Beitrei Ache, two brothers, they split up the property over here. Chad Matya Asplida, Chad Matya Tarbitza. So the word Tarbitza we saw before. Tarbitza is the, right, the antechamber, the garden in front of the house, that when a person enters in the house. So that part's easy. The problem is, what is this Asplida? There are actually three interpretations of what the Asplida is. Rashi says the Asplida over here is a Traklin Yafe. Right? It's a large house, mansion, nice building. It's a really nice place. That's what Rashi says this Asplida is. The Tosus brings two possibilities over here what Asplida is. One is the Oruch, who says it's a Mi'ara, it's a cave, which he rejects because it doesn't, you'll see from the flow of the Gemara, that it doesn't sound like this is a cave over here. And then the Ri, who brings down the last interpretation, that the Asplida over here is an Achsadra. An Achsadra is somewhat like a gazebo, a colonnade, thank you, right? An open, an area that has columns as the walls, it allows for a lot of light to come in. It's very heavy with windows, right? Airy and light type of area that a person has. So that's the last possibility over here. So now, they split between them. One took this front garden, and the other one took the house. So now, Azal Hai Demacha Tarbitza, the one who got the garden went ahead, V'kalboni Ashita Apuma Daspelida, goes in and erects a wall right in the front of the house. Samarlei Kam Afot Alai. So now he says, you are darkening the light that was otherwise coming into my house. Rashi suggests over here that simply he blocks the light that's coming into the normal house. The Ri, on the other hand, says that he's diminished, that there is still light there, but you've diminished the light so to the point where this wouldn't be the normal lighting for an achsadra. So you still get light, you still have good lighting. It's just now that when you put up the wall, it's not the same way that it was prior to this, that the light has now somehow been diminished. So it's Amalei, Bididi, Kabinyano. He says, I'm building on my own property. Meaning that Rashi says, what does it mean that I'm building on my own property? Meaning that you don't have any rights here. Meaning that you haven't lived here for 3 years. We don't have it. Our split just happened yesterday. And you don't have any easements or rights that exist or existed for a long period of time that you come and demand from me that I can't put up a wall and say, oh, I had those lights for all this time and now all of a sudden you're coming and you're infringing on my light rights. That you can't do. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here, well, we'll say it, but the Ri suggests, because we're continuing the Ri Shita, again, is what I just explained before, the Ri Shita is that you can't come, right, true, you're causing some darkness here, but you still have light. There's plenty of light here, but it's not as big as normal for a Aksadra. So he says, you can't object to that. You still have plenty of light. I'm not really causing you any diminishment in the total lighting of the area. I'm causing it to be less than it would be otherwise in an airy light achsadra. But still, you have for a house, there's plenty of light in that area. The Rabbeinu Tam gives another pshat, which is interesting. It's the most interesting because what he said was that from my house, I was able to see my fields. So basically what you have done is blocked my view. I now, before, could have seen my fields. Now, when you put up the wall, you haven't changed the light. My house, the status of a house and the lighting for the house has not changed whatsoever. What has changed is, I'm no longer able to see my fields from my house. So you've inconvenienced me, right? But you haven't changed the fact that this is a good house with good lighting in it. Right now, obviously, the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam are not necessarily acquiescing to Rashi's pshat because we'll see in the flow in the Gemara in a second, but how could he suggest, according to Rashi, that he can just come and put up a wall right up there and say, oh, listen, there's still some light coming in, or I don't have rights. Because if that's the case, he could basically put up a wall in front of the door and say, too bad, you know, you can't get in anymore.
If that's your property.
Right. Exactly. The way Rashi is learning it is that if the garden is yours and there's no easement here because you haven't been here for 3 years, you could do whatever you like. And you could, the fact that it's only this case where he puts up a wall, blocks the light, right, suggests that it's not that he has full rights to do whatever he pleases. It sounds like that he could do something that as long as what he has done has not changed the status quo so much that it's no longer classified as an espelita, then that's okay. So that's why I think the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam are compelled or right, don't accept Rashi's Pshat and want to give something that's less dramatic in the effects of putting up this wall. So now, yeah, I mean, the Gemara reads simply like Rashi, and that's what Rashi is doing, as he does always, is gives Pshat in the Gemara, which sounds like Rashi. Now, the Gemara says, okay, so now you can say that I'm building on my own property. I'm Rav Chama b'din ka'amarle. So again, this is Rav Chama who says that he has such a right to say so. So Amarle Rav Ino, the Rav Ashi, Maishna Mahadatanya. Well, how is this different than that we had in a Braisa? So this is a Braisa that we saw together a couple times in Boba Metzia. Right? I think at least twice we saw it in Boba Metzia. Shnei Achim Shichilku. Two brothers that divide our property. Echad Mehem Natal Stei Kerem. Vechad Mehem Natal Stei Lavan. One of them took a vineyard, and one of them took a field of tvuah, right? Yesh lo bala kerem dalet amot b'stei levan. Right, so the individual who takes the vineyard has a right to avodat hakerem. Avodat hakerem is that you get 4 amot in addition to the kerem itself, the vineyard itself, you get 4 amot around to do avodat hakerem, right? Because shamanat kein chilku. For that reason, that was part of the division. The division is, I take a vineyard, you take a state tvuah. What is the definition of a vineyard? The definition of a vineyard is that I have 4 amot that go around the edge of the vineyard. Amalei, hatam, da'alu, da'hadade. There, they had compensation between them. So, what does that mean, that compensation between them? There was an uneven exchange over here. A vineyard and a state tvuah are not an equal division. So since they are an unequal division, there was actually money that exchanged hands. There was compensation that was paid in order to level the playing field. So when there was compensation paid to level the playing field or to make it an even exchange, part of that exchange, when he gave the money, was to include these 4 amot of avodata karen, of a hachamai. So what's the case over here? So you think there's an even division over here, right? The lo alo lahadade. Over here there's no compensation to even the playing field. One guy takes the garden in front of the house, the other guy takes the mansion. Right, that's not an even exchange either. That's why, again, the Tosos rejects the pshat of the Aruch that says it's a me'ara, that it's a cave. Talking about a cave and a garden, you could see that maybe there is an equal exchange. When you're talking about he was shuftani of skina, that this guy's a fool to divide over here, when you're talking about unequal exchanges, so then if you're talking about either an achsadra, or you're talking about a large traklin, according to Rashi, which is the most extreme of that form, then it's clear that you have an uneven exchange. So what only way to say that they had such a division is to say that he compensated him for the difference in value between the places. Right? The high shakal of spalida, the high shakal tarbitza, the low alula hadadadi. They're talking about a fool here that they divided between an espelita and a tarbitza and they didn't compensate each other. That doesn't make any sense. I'm like, he the alul hadade dmei livne kshure vehudre. Right? Even though, so it's true that they gave a difference in value. When you're talking about, say, a garden, and you talk about a piece of property that has a house or a mansion on it, what is the difference between the two of them? They both have property. The only difference between them is, quote unquote, the raw materials, right? The beams, the slats for the roof, right? And the bricks for the walls or to face the building. Those raw materials, that building, right?
Of course, the physical structure.
Right. The structure is what's the difference between the two properties or the value that's here. So he compensated him for the difference in structure. But it comes to the airspace. Right, then they did not, right, to compensate each other. They didn't buy. The money that he's paying for him is not for the airspace. He's paying him for simply the difference in value between a garden with a structure on it. So he says, wait a minute. Why can't he say to him? Originally, what I got from you, the vision I took from you, was that I got this mansion, or I got this exadra, according to the Ri. I got this building from you. Hashta mishavet li drona. Now you've changed what I got in. I mean that it's no longer it would no longer be called a truklin or no longer be called an exadra, but rather be called a idrona. Idrona is some sort of a hallway or a darkened room. So now you've changed
indrona,
right, so that you have an area that is no longer defined, but what we divided. I took an espalida, and now what I have is either indrona or idrona, right? I have something that is not the same definition of what we split. Right. So you have now changed. If he needs a dark room, right, then it's great. But otherwise, he has now changed the division, and he no longer has the value that I divided before. So Gemara says, Amar Rav Simi bar Rashi, Shema ba'alma poligle. Maybe, in general, he divided with him. Milo Tanya. So this, I'm sorry, before I said about the Boba Metzia, this is the price that we saw twice in Boba Metzia. What is it? Yeah, we did have the other, but this one also. Omer Beit Kura Far Ani Mocher Lecha. Right, he says, if I sell to you a Beit Kura Far, Beit Kura being an area, right, that produces a Beit Kura, right, so that... an area that produces a core. I'm sorry. So if I sell a fertile area that can produce a core, afal pi she'ein ela letach, letach being half a core, even though there's only a fertile area or plantable area of a letach, higio. That's it. Too bad. You get it. Whatever you bought, you get. Shelo macher lo ela shma. He only sold to him its name, meaning that I sold to you a beit core. As long as this is defined, or as long as we saw when we said this in the book of Gemara Baba Tzvi, you can say it one of two ways. As long as this is called a beit core, meaning that whatever I sold to you is called, people would call this area beit core, then what you got, because this is classified as a beit core. Or the other way around is that people in general would call such an area a beit kor. So what I've sold you is a beit kor. So that's what we agreed to, and that's what you got. Now it's clear here, right, that it has to be that the buyer, and that's what Tosafot says over here, shelokeach yodea sheyesh lo karka shekarui beit kor, that this individual has a property that's called a beit kor, even though it doesn't have a beit kor worth of plantable land. Otherwise he's tricking him. This can't be here that he's tricking him. He has to be aware that the seller has different properties. All of them are called the beit kor. Some of them have fully fertile and plantable land. Others do not. And then he knows he has that possibility that he'll get such a piece of land. So Tosafot says, why don't we just look at the money that he paid him? Obviously, if you pay for a beit kor with a fully plantable land versus a beit kor of only half plantable land, the difference in compensation will indicate to you. So he says either because he discounted him a beit kor, he gave him a lower price. So if he gave him a lower price, then the individual says, I got it at a cheap price because you needed to sell, and that's why I should get a full beit kor. And the seller says, no, I gave you a lower price because you're only getting a letach. That's exactly why I gave you the lower price. Or you could say that he only paid him a demei letach. He only paid him a demei letach, and then again, they have to work out between them why you paid only a demei letach over here. Again, as long as there's no cheating or, false advertising over here, then we can say that higio, that you get it. So Amar Beit Kor Afarni Mochelachaf Bishen Oletach Higio Shlom Achalo El Shma Behu Mitzukari Beit Kor. As long as this property is called the Beit Kor, either by that this property is known as a Beit Kor, or that people in general would call such a property a Beit Kor. Pardes Ani Mochelacha, I'm selling you an orchard. Af Bishen Bo Yumonim, even though it doesn't have trees, fruit bearing trees or pomegranates in it. Higio Shlom Achalo El Shma. I only sold you a piece of property that could be an orchard, that would be classified as an orchard. Behu Mitzukari Pardes. As long as this plot of land is called the Pardes, an orchard, either because it once was an orchard, or people call this land orchard, or that would be what people define as such a plot of land. Hey, it's an orchard. Kerem ani mochelachach, I'm selling you a vineyard. Af bishen bo nigufanim, even though it doesn't have vines in it. Higio shlo machalo elishma. Again, he only sold you a name. The name being vahu demitkari karma. As long as it's called a vineyard, again. So why don't I say the same thing, right? Over here, why can't he say to him, right? I sold you an espalida, and this espalida is what this is called, an espalida. I sold you something that would be called an espalida anyway. It says midomi. How can you say that? Over there, the seller can say, the buyer, I sold you a defined term. I sold you a beit kor. I sold you a kerem or a pardes. Over here we're talking about division of value. We're talking about division of value. When I talk about division of value, or I'm talking about division of utility, right? I want to use this property the way my forefathers used it. I mean, the way our father used the property, if two brothers, you're splitting it, I want to be able to use this property the same way my father used it. Now, or our father used it. And by the fact that you put up the wall, it's not going to be similar to the way that my father used it. So, Amrulay. So now again, this was the psak of Rabbi Chama, is that he's allowed to do this. Dina imei. The din is with this individual put up the wall. So now along comes, Mar Yanoko, Mar Kishisha, Breda Rav Chista, the two sons of Rav Chista. The simple way to read it is Mar Yanoko is the younger child, right, of Rav Chista, Mar Kishisha is the older child of Rav Chista. Tosfos on the other hand says it's just the opposite. Why? Because he says Mar Yanoko refers to Rav Chista himself. That he was born when Rav Chista was young. So the older child was Mar Yanoka, because he was born when Rav Chista was young, and Mar Kishisha was his child born when he was older, and therefore he is the younger child. Either way, it's the two children of Rav Chista. Right, the Ben Zkunim, right, exactly. Rav Ashi. So they say to Rav Ashi, Nehardai Litamaihu. This is the Nahardai. Those from Nahardai go according to their own Shita. Who are they referring to? They're referring to Rav Chama here, who's from Naharda. Damar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel. Rav Nachman says the name is Shmuel. Shmuel is also a Nahardai. Right, so they say that Achim Shechilku. Brothers that divide. Ein lahem lo derach zelze, velo chalonot zelze, velo sulamot zelze, velo matzmaim zelze, bizaru behen shalachot kvuot hein. When brothers go to divide up the property, and when they divide, the division is absolute. And there is no residual rights in the other person's property. So ein lahem derach zelze. Even though the access to one field is through the other, their father entered the field through the front field and to get to the back field. Nevertheless, when they divide the fields, that brother who has the back field no longer did not necessarily get that right. All he got was the field. He doesn't get the right that the father had before to enter since both fields were his. Once they divide it, they are like two different parties. They're like a mocher and a koneh. Over here, a mocher and a koneh don't necessarily leave residual rights in their property. So therefore they don't have a right. Same thing with lo chalonot zelze, you don't have rights to windows like our case over here. Just because there are windows here doesn't mean that those windows grant you an easement onto the outside property like our father lived. No, you divided the property now. His property he can do with as he pleases with. But lo sumlamot zelze, not ladders. Rashi says the case of the ladder here is if they divided up a house. One has the aliyah and one has the downstairs. That the upstairs neighbor does not have a right to place a ladder, right, in the chatzer of the individual in order to get up to his aliyah. You don't have rights. The downstairs has the downstairs house plus the chatzer. The upstairs has the aliyah. You don't have a right to place a ladder in my chatzer to get up to your aliyah. The way Tosus learns it is that the upstairs owns the aliyah and the chatzer. He owns the courtyard plus the upstairs, and then the other individual owns the downstairs. He says, you don't have a right to lean your ladder or lean your stairs against the wall of my house to get up to your aliyah. So either way, you don't have a right. You don't have residual rights because now we've divided the property. If you used to get water from the river, you used to have a irrigation channel that ran from the river through this property to the second property. You no longer have those rights. And those are halachot kvuot. So Tosa says, the reason that this halacha is true over here is because Shmuel paskins like Rabbi Akiva, and that Rabbi Akiva says that a mocher is mocher ba'ayin yafeh. When a mocher sells, he sells in a right, generous manner. When he sells in a generous manner, means that he leaves himself no residual rights. And therefore, since achim, shechulku, are like a mocher and koneh, therefore the rights are when he sells everything, including what would have been otherwise been his rights over here. But now, of course, what is the mark, you know, can Mark Shisha say in the name of Rav Chista? Rav Amar, Yesh Lahem. They do have the rights. Rav. Right, so it would be, because that would get...
Rav Shmuel.
Right, exactly. So that would be it. Although Rava would have been fine. Rava is not so far off. If it was Rava, then you would have to say no, but Rava could work over here, although because there's... Right. But because the quote is, Mariyinoku Mark Shisha, Rav Chista, I probably changed it to Rav, rather than Rava. Right. Right, so that would be Rav Amar Yesh Lahen, that they do have such a right, meaning that the rights, the residual rights do exist over here, and it's not like Nardai. So that would go against Rav Chama's Pesach over here, that he does not have the right to put up a wall and to darken the house in this instance. Right now, Ha'ushtare di'atme, denafakale tavra. There was a loan document that of Yitomim that they were creditors. The Nafaklei Tavra, Tavra is a Shovar, which means what? That there is a receipt now that all of a sudden shows up. So this receipt shows up, says that the debt was already paid. So I'm Rav Chama. So again, Rav Chama over here. Gevuye lo magvinenle. First of all, we do not allow them to collect anymore. Umikara lo karinenle. But we also do not rip up the shtar. We don't allow them to collect anymore because there's a shovar. There's a receipt. We don't rip it up. Gevuye lo magvinenle de nafek tavrale. Mikra lo karinenle. Why don't we rip up the shtar that says that the loan is outstanding? Tchigada yatme dumo maiti rayo umarile. That maybe when the Yitomim grow up, they will have proof. They will, come of age, and then they'll understand how to bring, or they'll know of proof, and they'll be able to find evidence that the shovar was a forgery, and they'll bring or that the edim were mizuyaf, that they were lying. So Amalei Rav Acha bray the Rav of the Ravina hilchosamai. What's the loch in this instance? Amalei kulu hilchoso k'Rav Chama. In all of these instances, the halacha is like Rav Chama, the bar mitavra, except for this case of shovar. The sade b'shakre lo mechazkinan, because we do not assume that edim will lie. I mean, that's not the underlying assumption that we would find that edim lie. That's not a premise by which we work. So over here, by the way, this might be why the Bach would change it to Rav instead of Rava, because over here, right? The question is, Amalei Rav Acha Brei the Rava the Ravina hilchasamai. He's asking what the halacha is, right? And if his father, right, Rava, Rav Acha Brei the Rava, if Rava paskined against Rav Chama in that previous case, then why would over here he say the halacha is like everybody against his father, against Rava, right? In the case here, he's only saying the exceptional case is the case of Shovar. That might have been part of what compelled the Bach to change it. All right, so now he says, Umar Zucher, Brei the Rav Mari Amar, Baha Nami Hilchasuk Rav Chama. Even over here, the locha is like Rav Chama. Dim ita de tavra ma'al yahu, ibayla afuke b'chayavu hon. If the shovar, if the receipt was a good receipt, it should have surfaced while the father was still alive. The fact that it only surfaced after the father passed away, then already marale, right? There's already some sort of questions about the veracity of the shovar, this receipt that has been brought out here. Mitzalafke, shmamina zufe zayfe. At least now there's a chashash. There is questions about the, right, qualifications of such a receipt, and therefore, since there's already questions about it, when you add on the addition of possibly that the edim forged it, then already we would say, yes, let's think about that possibility, because otherwise it should have shown up earlier. Right now, the new Mishnah. Kofenoto livnot beit sha'ar, bedelet lechatzer. People have if they share a courtyard, they can compel each other to build a entranceway to the chatzer. That means the entranceway means both a beit sha'ar, right, a area where the shomer can sit, plus a delet, a doorway that will not allow people to free access to the chatzer. Shimon Gamliel Omer, lo kol chatzerot ruuyot beit sha'ar. Not all courtyards require a beit sha'ar. And then we'll discuss which ones do and which ones don't. Okay, kofinot olivnot ir lo ir lo choma, the deltayim ubriach. When it comes to residents of the city, other members of the city can compel each other to build a wall, to put up doors to the wall, to the city, ubriach, and a lock on the city. Not all cities need walls. So again, the Gemara will discuss what that means. What are the qualifications of cities that do and don't? How long one must reside in a city to be classified as a member of the city? 12 months. For the first 12 months, you're not classified as a member of the city, and therefore you will not be, right, they cannot compel you to contribute towards the common needs of the city. On the other hand, if you acquire a property to live in there, then you become a member of the city immediately. So if you purchase a house and you're going to live there, then clearly you're a member of the city. If you're renting, right, or if you're just a passerby, you're not a permanent resident of the city, then one does not then get the qualification of a resident of the city until you live there for at least 12 months. So all these things will be discussed in the Gemara. The Gemara says, the member of the Beit Shar Mal Yusahi. Right, this underlying assumption of the Gemara is that a Beit Shar, putting up such a tower, watchman's space in the front of the doorway or some sort of building that defines the entranceway and makes it so that you can't look directly into the chatzer, that is a positive attribute, because you can compel the other party to do that. Vahu chasido, there was this chasid, Dava Ragil Eliyahu, Dava Mishtai Ba'adei. Eliyahu used to come and visit him every day, or all the time. Ovid Beit Sha'ar, he built a Beit Sha'ar for his chatzer, but Tulo Mishtai Ba'adei, Eliyahu no longer showed up. So why is that? So what's the problem over here? It says, Lo kasha hami gavai hami varai. It has to do with the placement of the Beit Shaar, whether it was inside or outside. Why does that make a difference? So Rashi explains over here is because the Aniyim come and knock on the door and they want to come to get, they want the Baal Bayit to hear him that they need something. So depending where the doorway is placed, will make a difference about whether the Ani can be heard or not be heard. If the door is on the outside, then when the Ani screams, he's right up against the door, he can scream in, and then they'll hear him. Whereas it's Migavai. If you have the Beit Shaar, then the door, meaning that the doorway is always in recessed into the building, then the Ani stands on the outside, he's calling out, it will never reach the inside. The Baal Bayit will no longer be able to hear him because the Beit Shaar is situated inside, so you have a buffer between the Ani and the Chatzir or the Baal Bayit. So again, if he's on the outside and he can enter into it and then he calls out, then he is no longer a buffer between him and the Baal Bayit. If it's on the inside, then he can't access it, and there's this buffer space where the Baal Bayit can no longer hear him. So that's why when it's Migavai, it's no good. Migavai, it would be okay. Now again, once it's inside, there's nothing to talk about. Now, when it's on the outside, maybe the possibility is that it's all on the outside. Depends if it has a door or doesn't have a door to it. Right? Again, that will depend on whether the Ani can call through or not call through. The question is, does it have a lock or doesn't have a lock on it? I mean, can he open the door and call in? Or is it locked so that he doesn't have free access to call into the Baal Bayit? Both of them have locks on it. Depends where the lock access is from. Is the lock from the outside or for the inside? Obviously, it's not a lock in the sense of, I would say like a security lock, where because obviously from the outside it doesn't make sense that you can lock the people inside, but rather one of the like the bars that they used to close to hold the door in place. I mean, that was the equivalent of what we call like the latch on the door that you can open and close, the handle on the door. So if the handle to open the door is from the inside, then that's bad for the Ani, then you can't open it anymore, can't call in. Whereas if it's on the outside, he can open it up and he can call in, it won't be a problem. All right, now. You only need a Beit Shaar when the Chatzir is adjacent to the Rishut HaRabim. Because what's the fear? The fear is that the people of the Rabim will be crowded. There'll be, you know, a lot of people in that area, and they'll push into your Chatzir, or they'll kind of slip into the Chatzir. So we want to put up a Beit Shaar to prevent people from entering into the Chatzir when there is Rabim over there. On the other hand, if you're not adjacent to the Shut Rabim, in Ruya the Beit Shaar, you no longer need a Beit Shaar over there. You don't need someone to be a Shomer to sit there, or a special building in order to protect. That sometimes, even though you're not adjacent or directly adjacent to the Shut Rabim, nevertheless, it gets crowded. There's something going on. I don't know if there's a party down the block, and there's something happening, and then the Bnei Rishut Rabim end up in front of your Chatzer, and they're going to end up coming into the Chatzer because there's quote-unquote free access to your Chatzer. They look at it as an extension of the Shut Rabim. So you need a Beit Shaar to protect against it, even when you're not directly adjacent to the Shut Rabim.
Building of a gas being considered an undesirable thing as a Kiliyahu, no more business. And if you need it, because otherwise people who just around it aren't going to be pushing in, so you know there's nothing wrong with building it in that case.
Right.
But in a case where you don't really have that need, if you're building it,
He doesn't say it explicitly, but what I think you're saying is true, that if there are mitigating factors, I mean that according to Rav Shimon Halevi, you have to weigh the factor between the detriment of putting up a Beit Shaar versus the benefit. So it's only when the two can weigh out, when there's enough weight in putting it up that offsets the detriment of putting it up, then that would be the case when we say go ahead and put it up. But in the case where it's not, the benefits do not outweigh the detriments, then he would say no. And I think what you're saying is true. He doesn't say it explicitly, but I would agree. All right, so now the next part of our mission, which talks about the ear. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, it's probably Tanya should be the gears over here. Shimon Omer, lo kol ha'irot riot l'chuma. Not all cities require a wall. Ela iras muchal l'safar l'safar ruya l'chuma. Right, that which is near the border. Cities that sit on the border require walls. V'sheinas muchal l'safar enon ruya l'chuma. Those that don't sit on the border, they don't need walls. I mean that they're not exposed to the dangers all the time. Rabbanan zimnin de mikrei v'ate gaisa. Sometimes you get invaded. If you get invaded, then the city needs protection. I mean, a city needs protection not only when it's just on the border, but a city needs protection even when it's, right, more, again, internal. Again, in both these cases, you have to suggest that the chaser is not totally distanced from the Rishut Rabim, and the Ayara here, this city, is not totally far away from the border. Because the way the Rabbanan are expressing it is that there's a possibility that you would be the front line. Or in the case of the chaser, there's a possibility that the Rabim would get there. So I have to assume that there is a distance that is not directly, you're not directly on the border, but you're somewhat right, inward from that area. Close enough that it makes a difference. So Rabbi Elazar asked of Rabbi Yochanan, Kashenko bin, when they go and collect for the wall, how do you define your contribution over here? Lefin if Ashod Govin, it's on a head tax. It's a head tax. The number of people in the city you go on that. Odilma Lefi Shevach Mamon Govim, or is it an economic assessment? Meaning that it's a monetary assessment based on people's ability to pay. How do we assess the wall? So now the difference will be between them, and Tosfos points this out in other places we see this, that if it comes to sakanat nefashot, if it comes to life or danger, then life and limb or danger applies equally to everybody, and then you would collect based on nefashot. If it comes to the benefit of protecting property or money, then you would do it based on what you have to lose, right? Meaning that the amount that you have to lose. So here the basic question, and I think the question that's going on is the wall of the city. There is no imminent danger. Right, the danger is not imminent. So if the danger is not imminent, when you put up the wall, I mean, true, you're putting up the wall because you're on the border, and it could be sakanat fashot. So the question is that classified as sakanat fashot, or it's not sakanat fashot because the danger is not imminent? So that says, Amalei, the fi mamon govin, that we do it based on a wealth assessment. There is it's like an equivalent of a property tax or a monetary tax based on the ability to pay. Velazar bini kava ba masmerot. So again, a similar explanation to David. Put nails into it means that this is the halacha. Right? It's ikadam, right? And some say that the question was like this. By many Rabbozim Rabbi Yochanan, Shen Govin lefi kiruv batim govin, odim lefi mamon, or it probably should be shevach mamon govin. Over here that they are govin based on their proximity to the outside of the city. Right? I mean that those that are closer to the wall need the wall more than those that are internal to the city. Right, and therefore your proximity to the wall will define how much you have to contribute towards the wall, or again, is it a monetary assessment on the individuals? So Malay the fi kiruv batim hin govin. It's based on your proximity to the wall in which you pay. Now Tos the Rabbeinu Tam over here makes an interesting qualification, which I think is important. He says that there is still a monetary assessment over here, which means that what it means is that Ashirim and Aniyim will pay a different amount. Rich people will pay more than Aniyim. The difference between Aniyim that are closer to the wall and Aniyim that are further from the wall, and rich that are closer to the wall and further from the wall. So the difference will not be that an Ani who's closer to the wall will pay more than a rich individual who lives further away. No. They're two different levels. They're in a different category whatsoever. There's the rich category and the poor category. Now the poor will have two different levels or sub-categories, which are close to the wall and away from the wall, and same thing with the Ashirim. Even though they pay more than the Aniyim entirely, but there'll still be a sub-category of close to the wall and far from the wall. So he says that's the halacha, that it goes based on.
So you use both dimensions, also the fikru v'tim, and also each one has to lose.
Right. So that's exactly what Rabbeinu Tam says. Rabbeinu Tam says that Kiruv Batim doesn't stand alone. Kiruv Batim is in the context of Shevach Mamon. Right. So then he says, Elazar b'ni kavaba masperot, again, that the fi Kiruv Batim is alacha, and put in nails into it, because that is the alacha. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya Rama Deshura Ad Rabbanan. But then as he assessed the Rabbanan, the value of putting up the wall, meaning they placed the tax on the Rabbanan for putting up the security wall. Why? Because they equally benefit from the wall like any other member of the city. They're protected by the wall. So Amar Reish Lakish, Rabbanan lo tzricha nitiruta. The Rabbanan don't need, right, nitiruta. Why? Because they are niturei karta. Right? They are the guardians of the wall. They are the wall of the city. And that's exactly what the Gemara says here. Dechtev says, Asaprei michol yibirun. I will count them. They will be greater than the sand. So Asaprem Laman, who is Hashem counting over here? Ilem al tzadikim, if he's talking about the tzadikim, the nefishe mechala, that they're more than or more greater than the number of the sins, the grains of sand. He says, Ashka kuli shok tibu kechol ashel svatayam. Bnei Yisrael are defined as kechol svatayam, tzadikim atzmam mechol yirbun. They're going to be more than that. I mean, if all Klal Yisrael is kechol svatayam, then how can the tzadikim be more? That means that they're more tzadikim than there are people in Klal Yisrael. It doesn't make sense. Elochi kamar. So what does it mean? Asaprem Laman asehem shel tzadikim. I will speak about the ma'asim, the actions of the tzaddikim, the ma'asim that they do. Michol yibelun, they are greater, right, than the sand, the grains of sand on the beach. Bekavachomer, umachol shemu'at magin alayam, just like sand, which, or the beaches, which are less than the waters in the sea, prevent the waters of the sea from coming up on shore, right? Ma'asim shal tzaddikim shem merubin, that are greater than that of the sand. Glokol shekein shemaginim alayam, certainly they'll protect them, and therefore they do not need the wall. They have their own, meaning that they are self-protected. Since they are self-protected, they shouldn't have to contribute towards the war. When he came to Rabbi Yochanan, why did he use that? Why did Reish Lakish use that as the proof? He should have brought it from here. Right? So that I am a chuma, and Shaddai, my breasts are like a migdalot. Ani chuma, zu Torah. The chuma refers to Torah. Shaddai ke migdalot, elu talmidei chachamim. So if you define the chuma as being the, right, the Torah, right, the wall is Torah, and who are those that are, you know, osek b'Torah? Shaddai ke migdalot. Right, so Shaddai ke migdalot means that they are a subset of that area. So the Torah prevents the wall, and the migdalot are like the, you know, the ramparts, the areas that protect, or that they're the protection of the wall. Those are the Talmidei Chachamim who learn Torah. They're the ones who provide like the equivalent of a wall around. She says, Reish Lakish Savar La Kedarish Rava. Right, so Reish Lakish holds like the way that Rava explains this pasuk. Anei choma zu Knesset Israel, v'shadai ki migdalot, elu batei knesiyot, ubatei midrashot. So Anei choma is Knesset Israel, and then what makes them, what protects B'nai Israel, what protects them are the shuls and the batei midrashot. So that's a broader definition of who is, quote unquote, right, afforded this choma, this protection, is all of Klal Yisrael. If that's the case, then Talmidei Chachamim are not classified as unique in this pasuk. If they're not unique, that wouldn't be a reason to exempt them from the tax or the wall tax over here. Okay, we'll stop over here.